And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here with the late Patty Fink. And substituting for the late Patty Fink is Jim Schutz, who's from the previous show. Thanks, Jim, for sticking around a few minutes. Patty got stuck in traffic.
Absolutely. I felt that I wasn't depressing enough last hour, so this gives me another shot.
Great. So you've come to really bring down our show. Thank you.
Sure. No prob.
This week is the inauguration. Right. And so Patty and I thought we would just talk inauguration. She's real excited about it, and she will do that when she gets here. But she was stuck behind a stuck 18-wheeler.
Right.
I've been writing about the inauguration this week, and what I was writing about in particular were all of the gay connections to the to the inauguration. The Lesbian Gay Band Association is performing, and the inaugural poet is gay.
Right.
And they appointed, Obama appointed eight people as the honorary chairs this week, and one of them is from the Service Members Legal Defense Network, and he's somebody who had been thrown out of the Navy under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and now he's part of the inaugural committee, which is just a nice symbolic thing that says, hey, everybody's welcome in this.
The poet was on national TV last night.
Oh, what? Do you know, everybody's been trying to get in touch with him, and he's been denying all interviews, saying he's too busy writing poems.
He was very impressive. He's a real, you know, he's a young guy, very charming, very at ease with the media, and modest, really an interest, a cool guy.
Huh. His background seems real interesting. He was conceived in Cuba, born in Spain.
Right.
And,
he talked about that. And his parents, immigrants, wanted him to be a civil engineer, you know, so he'd have a way to make a living.
Uh-huh.
I wish my parents had thought of that.
Writers. Well,
yeah,
what are we thinking?
Right. He started writing poetry, and was just a very... He didn't read any poetry, so and I haven't read his stuff, but just a really... charming guy, and not much. The interviewer tried to get him to go to being the first gay poet to be, you know, and not much discussion of that. Just saying that his whole life, because he was an immigrant kid in Miami, has been about trying to fit himself into this so-called American dream that he's, he talked about watching TV as a kid, and what it looked like, and how he didn't see himself in that picture.
And what's kind of interesting about him, he lives in Maine now. He moved there in 2009 with his partner. Yeah. I think it's because he got a civil engineering job up there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but he just published another book of poetry within the last year, and one of his themes that he does write about is you know, being included and in American society, and how being an immigrant affects him.
And I know you guys,
not just immigrant, but also immigrant and gay.
You guys, I assume, are going to talk about this. That the theme of the inauguration seems to be way less Obama than the American people,
right?
And
that happens often during a second inauguration. Whereas the first inauguration is about change, you know, change from George H.W. Bush to George Bush, change from George Bush to Obama, you know, from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. The second inauguration usually is much more toned down. So, okay, so I have all these... all these inaugural trivia things. When was the first inaugural parade held?
Oh, you're going to ask questions. I've got to get out of here. I'm sorry. I just remembered I have a heart operation in a minute.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well,
thanks.
Well, good for you.
Thanks, Jim.
Congrats. Thanks, Jim.
Patty, when do you think the first inaugural parade was held?
1904.
No, actually, the first inaugural parade. And do you have both of us in the in your, or does Patty need to move over? Patty,
that looks better.
Okay, Patty can move over so that we're actually talking to each other and not across the room from each other. Yeah. Okay. The first inaugural parade was Washington's first inauguration, And the way the parade happened was Washington lived in Mount Vernon outside of Washington, D.C., which didn't exist yet. And the Capitol was in New York City. So the entourage taking Washington up to New York for his swearing in became a parade as other militias joined in along the parade route, along the along the route for him to get up there. And he was sworn in front of Federal Hall in New York City. I don't know where that is. I grew up in New York. I think it's down like in the Wall Street area, I'm assuming, because Fifth Avenue just wasn't Fifth Avenue yet.
It didn't exist yet.
Right. Yeah. So, okay, so at his first inaugural address, how long was it? Do you think he went on long, or was it?
No, I think he went maybe 5 minutes.
Not even 135 words.
Really?
Was the first inaugural address.
But, yeah. You know, he was extraordinary. Not only, I guess, at the beginning by having such a short speech, but the pivotal moment really for civilization as we know it was at the end of his presidency. He walked away, and up until that point, nobody in the world had the power of running an entire nation and giving it up. It had never been done before. And so that was the big moment for our democracy, was when he left office. It had never... I mean, a lot of people wanted to make Washington a king.
Right.
And they said, no, we've done that. You know, we've been there, done that. We got away from that.
Although our transition of presidents is the only imperial thing that we do, and it's considered so important that the actual oath of office is part of the Constitution. The day and time was set in the original Constitution, changed by the 20th Amendment. It's interesting how this one particular thing that will be going on Monday is something that is so ingrained that it's in the Constitution. And the idea that even though the Constitution says the 20th is the day of transition, it's only by tradition that it's on the 21st when the 20th falls on a Sunday. Monroe was the first president to be inaugurated, or should have been inaugurated, on Sunday. And, of course, that's your people's Sabbath, so we don't do that. Annie and I wouldn't care of it. So half of the studio here. It's just by tradition, and that's not set by law. Because
there was no provision explicitly written into the Constitution about what happens when it falls on a Sunday.
No, they just hadn't thought
about
it.
And it's only happened six times. This will be the seventh.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
yeah.
It'll be cool.
Inaugural parades have happened every single time since Washington. What's the only inaugural parade that was canceled?
Wow.
All planned, but canceled.
85 Reagan.
Right.
85 Reagan, because it was too cold.
1985, it was too cold. It was like 70 degrees.
He had it inside.
Mm-hmm.
He'd done it inside because it was so cold. And we do know a president who was out doing his inaugural speech in the cold and like died a month later.
Right. That was William Henry Harrison.
Yes.
And died a month later. Okay, so despite a blizzard that forced the inauguration ceremonies inside for William Howard Taft in 1909, the parade proceeded as planned, because there was this blizzard, and all night they were shoveling snow so that the parade route could go on. But they did move the actual inauguration inside. The other interesting thing about Reagan's second, the fact that it was so cold for his second, for his first inauguration, that was the record warmest inauguration in history.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
So, and before we go on to other things, the only inauguration that had no parade planned. So there was only one time in our history that a president decided we're not having a parade this year. Which one do you think it was? Clint is good at this. He needs to be on camera. It was FDR for his fourth inauguration in 1940 because of gas rationing and a lumber shortage. They just figured, how can we have a parade?
So, right.
Yeah.
Right. Even though these things are done with private funds.
You know, they are, but there was gas rationing.
Oh, right, right.
So they didn't want people to have to travel to the Capitol for this. There was a lumber shortage was part of the problem, because a lot of these parades, especially at that time, were floats. This parade this year is mostly groups that are marching. Of the 50 groups, 25 of them are bands, and then most of the other 25 are not floats. They're mostly things like regiments and other things that will just be marching and twirling and doing other things.
Twirling.
Well, when I was talking to the people at the Lesbian Gay Band Association, they were given a list of rules. And the rules they have to abide by are fascinating. First of all, you can't reach into a pocket anywhere on the parade route. Because if you reach into a pocket, they think you're pulling out a gun.
Right.
There's the possibility. When I was talking to Pete Schulte this week, who's a Dallas attorney, he's the attorney who was doing the gay divorce case, is what he's best known for, really. Actually, Deion Sanders' wife's divorce, he's representing her, so maybe that's what he's actually best known for. Anyway, when I was talking to Pete, he said, yeah, I don't think on the parade route, because he's going to be sworn in as a U.S. Marshal tomorrow, I don't think on the parade route we're going to be watching gay band members worrying about whether or not they're doing anything they shouldn't be doing. He said, I think I'm going to be watching the crowd. But anyway, the band said, no reaching in pockets. I said, what if you have a runny nose? They said, a little tissue in the sleeve.
Right.
But, you know, so delicately. But they have some flaggers and twirlers with them, too. Well, they can twirl in the fingers, but they can't throw up and twirl. I don't mean throw up and twirl.
They can't toss and twirl.
The flaggers can wave the flags, but they can't throw the flag up and spit. It can't leave their hand.
And nothing it can't can joust. They can't joust, I guess.
No jousting also, right.
Right.
So, the LGBTA band is participating this time. What was the first time a band marched in an inaugural parade?
I'm going to guess Washington's.
No. Washington was strictly these military
Yeah, but they have five
regiments.
Bands. Five
yeah,
bands.
But it was very un...
They're documented in
unplanned.
Oil paintings everywhere. You know, I mean, we know that they were there.
They did. But the first time a band marched was in Jefferson. And Jefferson was the first one inaugurated in Washington, D.C. Adams was inaugurated in Philadelphia, so the Capitol was kind of moving a little bit. Got to Washington by Jefferson. It was the Marine Marching Band, and that band has marched in every inaugural parade since.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is, I think that
it's
is
a great tradition.
It is a great tradition. You know, and that's what I think I love about the inaugurations, and it has nothing to do with whether or not I like the president. It is a great tradition. It's enshrined in our Constitution. It's the one time that...
In fairly great detail.
In a lot of detail, whereas a lot of other things, you know, yeah, you can have guns. That's the whole Second Amendment. You know, but this has specific wording that the president will say. It has the time. It has, you know, it really is the thing that I think the founders saw as... The cornerstone of our democracy, because, like you said, with Washington going out of office, that had never happened before. The transition of office was something that was so important that they really enshrined it and put all of these...
Well, the founders even did something so interesting, I think, with the United States Senate. They established three classes, and, excuse me, all senators know which class they're in.
Mm-hmm.
It's class 1, 2, and 3. And they're staggered.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have two senators in each of 50 states, so we have 100, every 6 years somebody's up, a third of them are up for reelection. And then 2 years later, another third are up. And so they're all staggered. And that was expressly written into the Constitution. And so every state has two elections where they're one of the or the other of their senators is up, and then they kind of fallow for an election.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's done very purposely and very structured so that, you know, that it wouldn't be happening all over the country, and we could have some stability, and there would be people that would continue to be senators who were not involved in that, you know, mm-hmm. so that everything wouldn't stop and start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really quite planned.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to one more gay trivia thing.
Okay.
Okay, the first openly gay people to participate in an inaugural parade. First time...
93 with Clinton.
That's right. And you know who they were. They've been on our show. Louise Young and Vivian Armstrong.
Yes, they were in his inaugural parade with other families, American families.
Yeah, there was a float in that parade, and it was called the American Families Float. And there was supposed to be a gay male couple in that, too, and for whatever reason, they weren't able to get there. And Viv and Louise had been very active in the Clinton campaign, and so Clinton called them and asked them to participate on the families, the American Families Float.
I thought that was just wonderful. And what a great, great couple to represent us.
Oh, yeah.
Just tremendous.
We
need to get Louise and Viv on again.
We do, and they would have been perfect guests today.
Yes.
You know, we were knocking our brains out trying to find who's going to be in town that can talk about the inauguration. Everybody that we contacted, I'd love to do that, but I'm going to be up in Washington.
They're going to the inauguration. But, so,
yeah, I talked to several people this week. One, he was being very modest about it. You know, I said, what was your participation in the election? He said, well, I was called and asked to start doing a little bit of fundraising. I said, you got an invitation to come up to the inauguration. Do you know where you'll be seated? He said, yeah, we'll be on the platform. You know, it's like, so he didn't do a little bit of fundraising. He did a lot of bit of fundraising. He bundled, I don't know how many million, in this billion-dollar election. But he said, after Obama came out, he started last February, after Obama came out and supported same-sex marriage, he said, it just became more important to me to help his reelection. And so I started asking friends to donate. I said, so you bundled, and I didn't ask him how much he had actually bundled, but it had to have been a bunch.
Right.
But he'll be up there on the plane. Anyways, and you asked several people also not going to be in town
right,
for this.
Right, not going to be here because they're going, and they're already gone, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of them already left, so... That's it. I think it's so exciting to be able to go. And we got Aaron and I both got invitations to attend. But, of course, no tickets.
No tickets, and you weren't going to be up on the platform.
Oh, no.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and I want to say thank you again to Jim, who...
yes, thank you very, very much,
stayed
Jim.
A few minutes because Patty was stuck in traffic. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Sonny Bryan's Catering presents the 14th annual KNON Blues Festival on Saturday, January 26th and Sunday, January 27th at Poor David's Pub. Join us for the biggest blues event of the year, starring the Royal Rhythm Airs, Bobby Patterson, Blues Boy Bo, the Aaron Burton Band, Andrew Jr. Boy Jones featuring Carrie LaPie, Pete Barbeck and Seven Son, Bonafide Blues, the Deep Ellum Rhythm Kings, the Dallas Blues All-Stars featuring Hash Brown and Mike Morgan, the KNON Blues Review with J-Back, Sonny Boy Mark, Blue Lisa, and Jeff Stone, Big Charles Young, the Drew Elaine Band with special guest Sirloin, and the Super Kings. This is the big one. You never know who's going to show up as a special guest. Don't miss out on this huge blues show. Advance tickets are only $15 and are available now at KNON.org, Bills Records in Dallas, and Forever Young in Grand Prairie. See you at the 14th annual KNON Blues Festival presented by Sonny Bryan's Catering.
Hey, baby! The 27th annual Elite News Martin Luther King Jr. Day Parade and Festival is coming this Monday, January 21st on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in sunny South Dallas. The parade goes from Lamar to Fair Park and ends with a festival inside the Tower Building at Fair Park. KNON will be in the parade and at the festival. The annual Elite News Martin Luther King Jr. Day Parade and Festival, the People's Parade, is a 27-year-old historical community celebration founded on tradition, heritage, and commitment. The voice of the people, KNON, 89.3 FM in the People's Parade, the 27th annual Elite News Martin Luther King Jr. Day Parade, 10 a.m. this Monday morning on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Dallas. Without the work of Martin Luther King Jr., a station like KNON would not have been possible. The voice of the people celebrates Dr. King's legacy.
Blue Monday, Howdy, y'all. This is Johnny Baker Jr. from Oak Cliff, Texas. The only type of Blue Monday I can stand is if Fats Domino is playing the piano. To fix this, start your week right. Listen to the Magic Time Warp Show with Ranger Rita, Action Annie, and Rockin' Robin. Soothe your Monday morning groove from 7 to 9 a.m. right here on KNON 89.3. We are the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and Clint has joined us because he's a presidential inauguration expert. So
I wouldn't say
he's a
expert.
Font. You're a font of trivia.
He's a font. Let's just call him the font. Patty, I don't know if you noticed, but our theme song, my house was broken into this week.
Right.
Real bad. As I was leaving for the studio today, I went to grab my KNON backpack because I have one backpack that I use just for here. So my headphones are gone. All my polka music is gone.
So sad.
Yeah, somebody's
sure
out there just
somebody's gonna,
boogieing to polka.
Yeah, somebody apparently is. But also, our theme song was gone. So we quickly downloaded a version of our song. And the song comes from the Donna Reed Show. But it's... it was public domain music at the time that they used it. And so we just found a version of it, but it's from a later season. The one we'd been using for the last 10 years is from the first season. That's the original long form. Well, you know, theme songs get shorter and peppier.
So they zipping it up.
Yeah, so
I think they added a phone ringing.
Something like that, yes. Yeah. So this is our new peppier, zippier, updated version of our theme song. Okay, so Clint, Andrew Johnson, when he was sworn into office as vice president.
Right, and this would become a man that would become president because he... Lincoln died in office, but when he went to go be sworn in as vice president, because the vice principal, their inauguration is immediately following the president's inauguration. He was sick that day, and so sick, but they didn't have any medication for him. I mean, we're talking Civil War time, and someone suggested to him that he drink some whiskey to flush it out of his system.
I think that's a good idea.
It seemed like a great idea. And
Patty does it every week.
He was so drunk by the time it was time for him to take his inauguration that he basically couldn't talk, and they say the historical documents say he was basically a rambling mess of nothing. So, you know, it happens even to those in the highest of office.
That is funny. It wasn't until Roosevelt that...
We had penicillin?
It wasn't until Roosevelt that the vice president was sworn in on the platform with the president. Until then, the vice president was sworn in the House of Representatives in the Senate, I guess. No, I think House of Representatives or the Senate.
I would think the Senate.
He presides in the Senate, so you would think
he
the Senate.
He would be in the Senate, yeah.
I read something this morning that said House, but it probably was in the Senate, but sworn in a private ceremony before the president.
And where the president gets sworn in has moved locations three times since
they got to Washington.
Since they got to Washington, D.C.
And the Capitol was
right.
built.
They used to do it kind of like out on a patio of the White House, and then they moved it, I can't remember, and then Reagan moved it.
Reagan is the one who moved it to the current location.
Which is outside of the Senate House, I think.
It
faces the mall.
Which makes so much more sense. They used to swear in on the far side.
The far side's a very small kind of square area across from the United States Supreme Court, but it's not very big.
Right.
But they weren't televising it then.
Right.
And let me see if I can find those.
But the mall, of course, is so expansive.
Right. And you know, when I was a kid growing up and I would hear the mall, I would think, oh, I'm going to go down to North Park and there's going to be... But, you know, if you've never been to D.C., when people talk about the mall, it's just this huge, long strip of grass.
But like a mall that has stores on the side, this has museums and federal buildings on either side. So it is the same sort of a mall. Okay, technology. The first inaugural ceremony recorded by a motion picture camera.
FDR.
Okay, and...
I would say older than that.
Yeah.
Like Taft or something.
Okay, it actually was McKinley for his first inauguration in 1897. So it was actually recorded. It was not...
broadcast.
There was no way to broadcast.
There's a photograph of Lincoln's.
First president to actually be photographed at his inauguration.
I think it was Lincoln.
Yeah, I would say it was probably.
It was actually Buchanan, who was before Lincoln.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, the first gay president.
the worst president in the history of presidents.
Unfortunately. The first president to ride in the procession in an automobile.
Oh, my. Wilson.
I would say McKinley again.
No, it was actually Harding who came after Wilson, 1921.
Wow.
And he died.
They waited a long time.
And
wasn't
he did
Harding?
Die after he had a stroke.
McKinley died, too.
McKinley was shot in his second term. Yeah. The first inaugural ceremony broadcast nationally by radio. And let me give you a clue. It was before KNON was on the air.
Yeah.
I hope
that
was helpful.
That's pretty old. That's a long time ago.
By radio?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out and say Polk.
No.
That would be Morse code, I think.
That would have been Morse code. And I forgot which one. There was one. First one that was actually telegraphed, and it was somewhere around Polk, but it wasn't Polk, and I forgot which one.
See, I thought Polk was the first gay president. But.
It was Buchanan. Who was actually living for a while with Vice President King, who was Vice President under the previous administration.
So he just stayed on.
And kind of. The only thing is, the reason there is no written proof of all of that is because their nieces, Vice President King's nieces and Buchanan's niece, took all their letters and burned them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, after they died.
That's too bad.
So the first broadcast by radio...
I was going to say Wilson, maybe.
Okay,
it's someone way back there. I have no idea.
Okay, it was after Wilson and then Harding, then Coolidge. It was Coolidge in 1925.
Really?
1925 till it was broadcast on radio.
So interesting, because I thought it would have been the 20s.
Yeah. Well, 1925.
Okay.
1925. First televised parade.
Televised parade?
Uh-huh. Mm. An inauguration, really, I guess it was.
Eisenhower. Truman.
I would say they would wait all the way till Nixon.
No, actually it was Truman. 1949 was the first time it was televised. The first inaugural ceremony broadcast live on the Internet.
Oh, gosh. Clinton.
Oh, not Clinton. No way. Second Bush.
No, it was actually Clinton in 1993.
No,
it was broadcast on the Internet.
Oh, in 1993?
In 1993.
I thought maybe
his first one. You would think for 1997.
Yeah, 1997.
No, it was 1993. It was broadcast. Now, what was the quality of it? It had to have been slow. It had to have been slow, 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 jerky, jerky, jerky.
You had nothing but dial-up.
It was all on dial-up. So, but it was broadcast. Probably people had to download it, buffer it, and nothing like now where it just streams without any problems whatsoever.
I thought I read somewhere that this will be the first officially live-tweeted inauguration.
Oh, that's interesting.
I have no doubt.
That's interesting. Huh.
And we're going to learn about it in 140 characters at a time.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn about it a little bit faster because I'm going to watch it on TV.
We have TiVo.
Now, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about the poet that's going to be at this inauguration. Youngest inaugural poet,
first
Hispanic,
immigrant. First
immigrant, first gay.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the first inaugural poet?
Oh, golly. That'd be tough.
I don't know poets' names.
This is not for many points.
It is for a lot of points, I'm sorry. You're going to lose Who Wants to Be a Lesbian if you don't get this one.
Oh, come on. Well, I lose my lesbian card.
I think I can lose that one.
Oh.
Go for it.
Okay, the first inaugural poet, actually, was Robert Frost, who did the poem for JFK.
Oh, wow.
Now, how many inaugural...
We share a birthday, Robert Frost and I.
Ah, yeah. Well, happy birthday.
We just have the same birthday.
He's dead. You're the late Patty Fink, though. Isn't that funny that we don't call him the late Robert Frost?
Yeah.
How many inaugural poets have there been?
Oh. Wait, how many inaugurations have there been? Like 58?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but he was with JFK, so...
He was the first, right.
So, was that even 10 presidents ago?
Should we count them? Yeah, but there had been a lot of shuffling in there because I know there was an inaugural poet on Air Force One coming back from Dallas.
No, there wasn't.
And he was never, he never had really like a big
He did when he was reelected in,
no, he was never
in 64.
Are you talking about Nixon or
no.
JFK's?
JFK.
Okay, because Nixon's vice president was never really inaugurated.
Right, Gerald Ford just had a swearing-in ceremony.
He was the first unelected president of the United
First
States.
And only.
Yeah. But I was thinking about Johnson when he left Dallas. He was inaugurated. He took the inaugural oath of office.
Right, he was just
Air Force
sworn in
with the coffin of JFK flying back to Dallas.
But he was reelected, so he would have had a big ceremony.
In 64, in 65 would have been the inauguration, right?
So we got 60, 61, 65, 69, 73.
This number is going to surprise you.
I'm going to say 4.
Actually close.
I'm going to go with 6.
Okay, there have been 5 inaugural poets, including the current one. JFK had one, Clinton had one each time, and Obama had one each time. That's it.
Really?
Republicans do not like poets.
Apparently not.
You know, I remember the one from Obama's last inauguration, and I can't say I blame Republicans, because I was thoroughly underwhelmed with that poet.
It was who? Maya Angelou? Or was she
one of Clinton's? No, she was one of Clinton's.
She was one of Clinton's.
Was this pre or post Aretha's hat?
I don't remember. They also had a man speak that also did a thing of poetry right before the poet came on. And I just remember everyone, like SNL, tying those two together. Because his was like this little rhyming thing, and hers was, you know, this eloquent poetry. And everyone going, well, I kind of preferred the rhyming thing. And
iambic, damn it.
Yeah.
So only 3 presidents have had poets. And most of them are not known other than Frost. Well, of the 5, Frost, Maya Angelou are the 2 that were well known.
Right. They're already known as poets.
They were already known. The others are not names that are common. Okay, so the inaugural ball.
Wait, we forgot one.
Who?
Jeb Bartlett.
Oh.
He had a poet in his inauguration.
Right.
A little shout out to the West Wing.
Okay, so the first time there was an inaugural ball. You know, this time, actually, last time there were 10 inaugural balls. This time there are only going to be 3.
I'm kind of going to say
it's got to be way back there, like Quincy Adams or something.
Yeah, something really early.
Yeah.
And it was Madison, 4th president. How much were tickets?
Free.
A penny.
No, they were $4.
Wow.
$4.
How much
are
they really wealthy to go to a presidential ball.
Right now, you can't.
I would imagine it hasn't changed too terribly much.
I don't know what the balls, but the inauguration itself, you can't get tickets.
You can't get tickets to any of it, but the balls now are hundreds or thousands. I'm not sure. Who was the first president to wear pants to his inauguration?
Pants.
The others were pantsless.
Wow.
First president to wear pants.
I don't know
He's
about
He's so great
pants.
If it could be Hillary, right?
Right.
I don't know about pants. I know Johnson was the first one not to wear a top hat.
Ah. He wore a Stetson?
He wore nothing.
Oh.
He's
nothing?
Yeah. Well, no hat. Everyone blames JFK for killing hats for men, but it was actually Johnson.
Hmm.
And I thought it was just and tails. I mean, like top hats and tails. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Kennedy had it. He looked stunning.
And Kennedy had the hat on, but when he got up to actually give a speech, he took it off. And that's what we all see is JFK without the hat, because that's when he gave a speech, and that's what we all see.
It's respectful to take your hat off in such a moment.
Right.
You know? Yeah. He would do it during a prayer.
Okay, so they don't want to answer my question about who was the
first president to wear pants.
Slacks. Whatever you want to call it.
I'm going to say balloons and
Coolidge again.
Pants. Gosh.
Every president since then has worn pants.
They were wearing like the, what do they call them, like the penny, whatever, the ones that came to like your knee or whatever.
Exactly. Okay, so before John Quincy Adams, the earlier presidents wore knickers.
Right.
And they only came to the knee, but since then they've all worn long pants. which I thought was kind of interesting. I thought tails were older, but actually, tails and top hat, that comes from 1800s. That's 1800 style. That's not older style than that. Let's do a little bit of diversity stuff. Who was, and I keep losing my place. Okay.
While you look for that on the balls, I don't know if this came up in your research or not, but it is always told that FDR on his first election had no balls.
No balls.
He had no inaugurational balls because he felt like a ball.
Patty, yeah. Be nice. This is the first time Clint has, he's produced our show for a couple of years now. First time he's been on the air. He's not used to dealing with us.
Okay,
FDR had no balls, according to that.
He felt like the country was in so much turmoil because of the Great Depression. He didn't want to spend the money on it.
He didn't have the right either.
Right. But that was the last one.
That was the last one because
this was the first one.
World War II.
Yeah. He wanted to immediately get to work. So, like, the end of his speech was, okay, now let's get to work, boys. And that's essentially what he did, is he went back and got to work, and they didn't go to any balls.
Well, they did have the parade because he made the speech at the Capitol, and they had the parade, but different parades have, just because there's been a parade, the parades have been different. He didn't necessarily have the reviewing stand. He didn't, and the purpose of the parade from the Capitol to the White House in the early parades was to escort the president to the White House. And that was really the point of the parade. It wasn't so much a like a
let's see
parade.
Snoopy and all
yeah,
that
well,
fun stuff.
No Snoopy, no big balloons that were floating above Fifth Avenue.
And when you think about it, I mean, it's really the transition from the previous president leaving office and the next one starting business.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big tradition that the preceding president will actually ride in the car with the incoming president, and there has been a few times where the outgoing president mm-hmm. just hates the incoming one so much that he will refuse to do so. But traditionally, they will.
Do you know
do
the
it.
Last one that refused?
I read it this morning, and now I can't remember.
Truman refused to ride with Eisenhower.
That's right.
They hated each other. My mother couldn't stand Eisenhower either. She worked at Columbia University. He was the president of the school, and her football tickets were right behind him. And she said, "What a dope." I mean, that's the only thing that she ever said about him. She just hated him. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. And our walk-in guest is Clint Ashley. He is also our producer. Annie is
and a font
at the
of inaugural
he
trivia.
He is a font of inaugural trivia. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this. Would you help
Sonny Boy Mark, and I'd like to take a minute here to tell you about over 60 minutes of great blues listening available now on KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. This is some great stuff, folks. 15 tracks from the Two Tones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, David Millsap, Sir Loin and the Ass-Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and J.J. and the Detonators. The 1,000 copies we made are selling fast, and we won't reissue it. Get yours now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records and Rewind Music. The CD is available as a download at cdbaby.com. All proceeds benefit KNON, sponsored by Forever Young Records. Vinyl copies available at Forever Young Records only. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org. Your ears been bending for some blues? Well, feed them the real thing with Texas Blues Radio Volume 5.
If you are the low-income parent or guardian of children in need of child care, there are programs available in the area that may be just right for you and your kids. Texas Workforce Commission offers solutions for families in need of assistance. Find them on the web at twc.state.tx.us. Click on Programs and Services in the blue bar at the bottom of the page to find out if you are eligible. 211 Texas, a program of the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, also offers child care provider referrals for families seeking subsidized child care. Contact them at 211texas.org or dial 211. If dialing 211 directly doesn't work on your telephone, you can call 877-541-7905.
listening to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here with the late Patty Fink, and Clint is joining us today. We're talking about the inauguration and inauguration trivia. Before we get to that, KNON will be in the Martin Luther King Day Parade this Monday, starting 10 a.m. on MLK Jr. Boulevard in Dallas. Look for us in the vehicle donated by Fiesta Limousine and the KNON Volunteer Crew Fleet. We'll be broadcasting live. It's your community radio station, KNON 89.3 FM, the voice of the people in the People's Parade this Monday morning on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in South Dallas between Lamar and Fair Park. This is the second largest MLK Day parade in the nation. Where's the largest?
I would imagine Atlanta.
Oh, probably, yeah. KNON thanks Fiesta Limousine and Elite News for supporting us in this year's parade. We need to beat Atlanta.
And that will feed right into your inauguration talk, because Obama will be sworn in with one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s Bibles tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yes. Or on Monday.
Oh,
he will use a Lincoln Bible, a Bible that belonged to Abraham Lincoln, and a Bible that belonged to Martin Luther King Jr.
And so, for his private swearing in, which will occur tomorrow according to the Constitution, he's going to use one of Michelle Obama's, her father's Bible.
So, and for the swearing in, the big question this year has been, will John Roberts have the oath of office written in front of him on a card?
Let's hope so.
When all of the Obamas
not qualified,
all the technology
in the world, and it skips words.
All the Obamas not born in the United States, all that nonsense, a lot of it started with the inauguration, because John Roberts screwed it up. He didn't have the card in front of him, and he switched a couple of the words, and so immediately everybody was screaming, oh, he's not really,
legitimately
sworn in, he's not legitimate. So the next day, John Roberts, on his way home from work, stopped by the White House and actually administered another oath of office, because they wanted to make
sure. Feel better.
It made everybody feel better. He did the oath of office correctly. It was funny listening to it again, because I heard it yesterday. Obama knew it was wrong as John Roberts was saying it, and he stopped at the point at which he knew it was wrong. But he did repeat what Roberts had said. So,
well, actually, all the other birther stuff, that pre-existed the inauguration.
Yeah, well, some of that, but the first time they were really calling for him,
he's never been properly sworn in, therefore he's...
Right, therefore he's not. And the one point when they were saying that Obama really wasn't born in the United States, his opponent was John McCain, of course,
who wasn't born
in the United States. Now, the problem...
He was born in Panama.
Well, the problem with that, and he was born in the Canal Zone, which was an American territory. I had hoped that would go to the Supreme Court at the time, and it would have been good for Obama also had it gone to the Supreme Court. It's not that we really think McCain wasn't qualified to be president under the rules that say that you have to be born in the United States, but the Supreme Court's never ruled on, well, what if you're born in a territory? What if...
Well, and the rules technically, I don't think they say you have to be born in the United States. They say you have to be born a citizen of the United States.
A natural born
citizen.
What does that mean? And it should go to the Supreme Court so that they can rule and say, yes, that's obviously.
But what's so ironic to me is that leading up to that election year in 2000, the actual campaigning of it in 2007, the United States Senate passed a resolution with Obama's urgencies and support to basically declare that John McCain was a natural-born United States citizen, so that wouldn't be an issue because they knew he was going to run. And Obama supported that. And I think it just drips with irony because, it wasn't McCain who got the guff for it. Mm-hmm. It was, and yet he participated in, a resolution to say, let's certainly even let that be an issue.
Okay, so this is the second time an African-American man is being sworn in as president. What was the first time any African-Americans participated in an inaugural parade?
Lincoln.
I would say much later.
Frederick Douglass, I think, was probably present somewhere.
I would have that, find that tough to believe. I would say much, much later. Maybe Martin Luther King was one of the first to participate.
Actually, Lincoln is right. Four companies of African-American troops from the Civil War participated in the second swearing-in, a lodge of African-American Odd Fellows and African-American Masons joined the parade.
Well, you know, he debated Douglas repeatedly.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
And so, I mean, he was a very well-respected politician at the time. You know, and I mean, there's the mindset of the kind of racial prejudice that we even see today and still persists today was not the same sort of thing in the North at the time.
Okay, what was the first time that a woman participated in an inaugural parade?
It was going to be after anyone of color.
Mm-hmm. I would say FDR's.
What do you say?
I want to go with FDR as well.
No, actually, it was Wilson's second swearing-in in 1917, and it was 2 years before women got the right to vote in 1919. I couldn't find anything on the history of that, but I'm assuming it had to do something with trying to get that amendment through the states.
You would think that maybe if what he did was maybe get like a Army Nurses Battalion to march in the parade or something.
Maybe
like that.
Maybe it was something like that. Because that
well, it was certainly Wilson who, you know, was in office as the suffrage movement was really, really, really kicking in. So that just I guess that's not surprising.
Okay, who was the first woman to MC the inaugural ceremony?
Ooh, interesting.
I have no idea.
First woman to actually MC. Now, we remember, like, Washington's MC was Jerry Seinfeld, and, you know, but when they got a serious MC... Dianne Feinstein, 2008, Obama's first time a woman MC'd. What I couldn't find here was how long have they had MCs.
Right.
But actually, from the time they made speeches, I would think the whole 20th century, you know, somebody got up and said, and now the President of the United States, you know, that kind of MCing.
It's usually some deep, low voice from a distant, unseen place from behind the curtain.
Right.
Like the Oscar MC or something.
Right.
Who was the first president sworn in by a woman?
Reagan.
Nixon.
Johnson. Sarah Hughes, here in Dallas, on Love Field,
course.
In the plane.
Yeah.
I was sure you were going to get that.
No, I didn't.
The inaugural parade today, it's limited to 15,000 participants. Who had the largest inaugural parade?
You mean 15,000?
No. Today it's limited to 15,000, and it's been limited for maybe 20 years or so. But the inaugural committee has limited the parade. Who had the longest inaugural parade? Parade, not the farthest. That would be Washington going, you know, hundreds of miles, but the longest parade.
You mean that?
Where they just kept coming and coming and coming, and they felt like they were watching the Alan Ross Texas Freedom Parade on Cedar Springs because it just kept going on and on.
Nixon, I'm going to say
JFK.
It was actually Eisenhower. He had 73 bands, 59 floats. He had horses, elephants, civilian and military vehicles. It lasted 4.5 hours, and that was at his 1953 inauguration.
It doesn't surprise me, having learned about Eisenhower.
But you know something? He had so many military troops participate in his, and that's why it got so long. So it was sometime after his that they said, wait a minute.
I would have nixed the elephants, you know, but that's just me.
Well, you know, I think, and I don't think they were meant as Republican elephants. I think it was meant to be triumphal. And
oh, I'm sure it was,
yeah,
but it's still.
Because 1953 was really the end of Reconstruction after World War II and rebuilding the economy. The economy was getting going again then.
Swinging 50s.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know?
The idyllic years.
Yeah, it was. I think that's all.
The Donna Reed years.
It was, well, no, actually Donna Reed was late 50s, early 60s, because I remember watching that on TV.
I won't say anything.
No, you won't. I'm having an argument with my graduating class. Most people in my graduating class are turning 60 this year, and I'm turning
37.
Late 39. Yeah. And I don't care. Other people change their age. I change my birth year. You have to change some number.
It's kind of the
I
same
thing. I prefer
to
change that one. It is kind of the same thing. You just change something. You wrote an editorial this week, Patty, about Jodie Foster.
Yeah, I did. And I have to say, I am still so gobsmacked mm-hmm. by what has taken place since Sunday night. in our community, in the LGBT community.
Now, every time we brought this up, you've always said, but she did come out.
She did come out in 2007.
Right. Different people come out differently. She came out by thanking her partner,
Sydney Bernard,
who helped raise her kids.
Yeah. I mean, Jodie Foster, you know, bore her kids, bore their kids together, you know, that are now...
And part of the argument, I think, was were journalists just lazy to find out who Sydney was, whether Sydney was a girl or a boy? Is that why people were mad?
She's been out in Europe. She's been out in Japan. She's been out pretty much everywhere except the U.S. And I think this may come back to... you know, saying the words, which I don't think are necessary at all.
Well, and I think, and the privacy part of this may be part of what she was saying, but, you know, 20 years ago, there was pictures of her with young women having picnics in the park and stuff. And I wanted to ask you guys, as an outsider kind of looking in, do you feel like this is too little too late? Like, Jodie Foster's career is pretty much over. You know, if she had done this 15 years ago when she was a leading lady and doing all these things and maybe could have really helped push the community forward and stuff like that.
And that's my complaint. That's my complaint is that people are not embracing her for having come out and said, this is a wonderful, 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 positive thing. I used to think it gets bitter project, you know, because that's what it looks like to me from the LGBT community. As if they're saying, it's too little, too late. She should have come out a long time ago. And never mind that she's given millions and millions of dollars to the Trevor Project, which is the place where the hotlines that kids call or anybody calls when they're
suicide hotlines,
thinking about suicide. Yeah. And so, you know, and she's been out. And she's been out.
And what, I mean, did she really come out? Because it was like, I'm coming out, I'm not coming out, I'm coming out, I'm not coming out.
No,
thanks, Sid. You know, I never thanked you when I got all these awards 15 years ago, but let me go ahead and thank you now. I just found, as an outsider, found the speech very confusing. And
you know what? It wasn't a great speech. And you know what that tells us? Actors who are used to reading other people's lines... and acting aren't great speech givers.
Well, I thought when you read the speech, it's amazingly coherent to me. And I thought it was when I heard it. But
if somebody like
I think it's really brilliant when you read it. But she moved from topic to topic within about 5.5 minutes. You know, from topic to topic to topic to topic, and boom. And so everybody's going, "Why she's all over the place?" She's trying to cram 50-year comments on a 50-year career into 5 minutes. You know?
But if somebody like Clint, who's only gay during our show, if somebody like Clint is saying he found it a little bit confusing, I get that.
I do too. I absolutely get that.
And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I don't think that was the best speech I've ever heard. You know, if you listen to the Academy Awards afterwards, everybody's saying, well, which speech did you like? And everybody will go to one particular speech, whereas 20 different actors gave speeches that night because they're all terrible. Mm-hmm. Why? Actors aren't good at giving speeches.
Unless
they're
you
just
the
not.
And you say, you like me, you really
well,
like me.
Well, but that was the one speech that year that everybody remembered. And it, even that one, I mean, not even, especially that one, it's remembered because it was dopey.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing I found confusing was she had, and I know he's a friend, but she had Mel Gibson with her.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was part of the criticism. Everybody hates him.
Well, everyone hates him, and he hates everyone. So for this to be her coming out speech and have this man sitting there with you that probably hates you for what you're coming out for,
she would disagree with you. She would say he's not like that. He had his public...
Some audio tidbits may say a little differently than what she feels, but that's out there, and that's part of the problem of Mel Gibson sitting
there.
But,
you know, she's been standing by... she sees it as, I've been a loyal and faithful friend to him for 20 years, and I'm not going to ditch him because he had this public moment. And she got a lot of grief for that. She still gets a lot of grief for that, and she's been standing by Kristen Stewart, who she co-starred with in Panic Room, who's now a Twilight star, and she, you know, stepped out on some boyfriend, and everybody's all over her about
who's
it.
Who's now she's back with.
By right, the way. But at the same time, she believes in standing by your friends. And I think that's...
And she stood by Robert Downey Jr., and now that's coming back and paying for her.
I mean, she did. But she stood by him when everybody else in Hollywood and everywhere else was like all over him, dump him, dump him.
Yeah, I just don't know. You know, and I guess the thing with Mel Gibson in that audio, there are words against the gay community that he uses in that audio. And
what audio? What audio? From the night? From the Golden Globes?
No.
From his arrest years ago. He railed against everybody.
You know? Yeah, and I don't know. It just seems like here's this beautiful moment for me, but here's this man that perceived to stand against what I'm doing.
Here's what I thought about the criticism of her coming out that way or talking about being gay that way in that venue. It was a show that was seen by millions of people. It was seen around the world. Talk about it, having a great audience doing that. One other high-profile coming out this week was Victor Garber.
Victor Garber. So. But, you know, he's been out. He's another one. He's been out.
He has.
It's like Ricky Martin when he came out.
Well,
he wasn't out before, but it was kind of like, come on. Like.
That brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly.
We can talk more about this another week.
There's lots to talk about. We want to thank you for listening. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.